Be seated. If we're ready to begin, please do so. And if you wish to reserve, please identify.
May it please the court. Melanie Morgan for appellants Paul and Laura Muldaun. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. The issue on appeal today is what rate of interest should be applied in order to ensure that the Muldauns are justly compensated for their loss of use of the interest on a $725,000 condemnation deposit. That deposit sat in the fund of the district court clerk for over a decade. It was deposited in May of 1995 and withdrawn in December of 2005. During that time that the deposit was with the district court clerk, the Muldauns were unable to access it. They were unable to access any of the interest it generated, and they were unable to invest that money as they saw fit. This court determined that an unconstitutional taking occurred when the county took the interest from the district court clerk without justly compensating the Muldauns. And on remand, the district court was told to determine what rate of interest should apply in order to determine that the Muldauns were justly compensated. We believe that the district court erred because there was no just compensation analysis. Rather, the district court sought to give the Muldauns the interest that was actually earned.
And there's didn't what the opinion said, the July 2008, it says the interest the county earned. I reread it again before today, both in the beginning and the end. So I realize it's an issue you didn't have records for a period of time, but right. Wasn't that pretty specific, though?
I believe that in any constitutional taking scenario, you're looking at just compensation. And so it's our position that the interest actually earned, even if we could ascertain that, is not just compensation in this case. The reason being that the interest actually earned, if we use the rates that we think it earned, of course it's speculative because we don't have the records, but we're assuming that it earned 2% less than CD rates. That's a very low rate. And if we look at what is just compensation, how is it defined, we can look at the Alper case for guidance. And Alper tells us that the word just intensifies the word compensation, and that just compensation is compensation that is full, real, ample, substantial. In the eminent domain context, we look at the best use of land. And the same should be said here. 2% below CD rates is not just compensation.
Well, that argument's interesting, but you didn't seek rehearing of this opinion. The opinion said you get the interest earned on the deposit. No one challenged, neither you nor Clark County challenged that holding. So on what basis should the court, isn't this decision bound by the law of the case?
The way I read the decision is that an unconstitutional taking occurred, and that it was remanded so that the district court clerk could determine what just compensation is for that taking. Now, a narrow reading, I would agree, says that it is the interest actually earned. But we don't know what that is because we don't have the records. And so the district court made a speculative ruling as to what the court thought the interest actually earned was. And candidly, we feel that the district court was interested in avoiding punishing the county rather than seeking to justly compensate the Muldauns for their loss of use of a substantial amount of money for over a decade. The Alper case tells us that we can look to statutes to aid the court in determining what is just compensation. And the statute I believe that is most on point is NRS 37.175, the eminent domain statute. And that statute says that prejudgment interest on the difference between the judgment and the deposit is prime plus 2%, at least prime plus 2%, and that prime plus 2 is a floor, and that under certain circumstances, the court is free to award an amount of interest in excess of prime plus 2. And we feel that there are circumstances that justify that in this case. The case of United States versus 412 acres of land, that's cited in the Alper case. It's a case out of California. And it says that if the condemnee has suffered an undue hardship that was not of their making, that can be taken into account in determining when an award in excess of a statutory rate is proper. Here we have an undue hardship. Number one, we have time. 10 years, 5 months, 7 days that the Moldons could not invest $725,000 as they saw fit. We have expense. This case began in 1995. The attorney's fees alone are very large. And we have the emotional toll of 16 years of litigation. That will take its toll on anyone. And of course, while we're not asking for any emotional type of damages, that should be taken into account. Finally, we have not only one taking in this case, we have two. First is the taking of the land, and second is the taking of the interest. So given all of those circumstances together, we feel that an award in excess of prime plus 2% is justified in this circumstance.
What's your position as far as the county's defenses, like statute of limitations and not making a claim for the interest and things like that? Do you feel that's controlled by the law of the case and the July of 2008 opinion?
We feel that the district court was correct in its ruling that the statute of limitations had not told, and that the county, well, it's our position that the county waived that because on the first appeal, that was the time to bring it up. The Second Baptist Church case says that the statute of limitations defense should be brought up at the earliest possible time, that the county waived that. But nevertheless, the district court judge found that our request for interest was timely made because it began to toll at the time that we were denied the right to the interest. I believe that was in 2008. It's not surprising that the framers of the Constitution in drafting the Fourth Amendment gave property rights the same due process protection as life and liberty. It's a big thing when the government uses its strong arm to come in and take something belonging to a private individual. And here that interest was taken. And the Moldons should not be limited to how the government decided to invest the funds. They shouldn't be limited to a rate of 2% below CD rates. It's our position that a more sound ruling would be at a rate of interest that is consistent with the rest of the condemnation laws.
But aren't you really asking us to revisit and revise the earlier opinion with respect to what it ordered?
I think the earlier opinion can be read two ways. I think there is a narrow reading that does say the interest actually earned, but I don't think that would include a just compensation analysis, and that analysis is absolutely necessary when we're dealing with a Fifth Amendment taking. So the opinion can also be read as to what would constitute just compensation for the taking of that interest.
But is it sound judicial policy to revisit an earlier opinion where an argument could have been made but was not made? And the express language of the opinion seems to say what this case was remanded for was a calculation of the interest actually earned. I'm troubled by that. Could you comment on that?
Sure. The opinion says what you just said, but there's also a portion of the opinion that says there was a takings clause violation when the district court clerk allowed interest earned from the condemnation deposit to remain in the county's general fund without justly compensating the Moldons. And so I think there was perhaps an assumption made that the actual interest earned constitutes just compensation by the district court judge, and it's our position that that's not just compensation because the rate was so low, because of the loss of use of the funds, because of the amount of time that passed while the funds were on deposit.
But there was no petition for rehearing and no motion to recall the remitter or any of that with respect to the first appellate proceeding, correct?
That is correct. That is correct. And again, I believe it centers on how the opinion is read and how it's interpreted. So again, we believe that the statute NRS 37.175 would provide for consistency because then you have a prejudgment interest rate of at least prime plus 2 on the award minus the condemnation deposit and for the condemnation deposit itself. So it would provide for consistency among eminent domain actions for prejudgment interest. And unless the court has any other questions, that's all I have for now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, Your Honors. Michael Foley. Not sure who I represent really again on this case. The title is Clark County, but really now it's a state district court clerk, I guess I represent.
Well, the court clerks represent.
Then, Shirley Perigary, the county clerk.
I see what you mean. It. Now it's the district court.
Now it's the state judge's handle. Anyway, I think there's two main issues here, and you've already brought up some of them, but the main one is just what was taken. All right, we didn't take the $700,000 that was on deposit. That was always there. It was always ready to be withdrawn. She mentioned that they could not invest it over the years. We went over this last time we were up here. Yes, they could have invested it. They intentionally left it in there. They could have done a stipulation to draw it out, put in CDs, put in any investment they wanted. They made a strategic choice not to do that because they were afraid it might impinge on their right to fight the taking. But I think the biggest problem in this is just reading the statutes. They keep going back to they should get prime plus two under the condemnation statute, interest statute, which is at NRS 37.175. And they keep just looking at that section one that says, you know, prime plus two, but they forget, or I'm sorry, section four, but section one says you only get interest on the part that's taken, you know, the amount of compensation over what was on deposit. It expressly says in subsection two that the government doesn't have to pay interest on anything that's deposited into the court. And that's the way it's been before the statute was adopted. That's the way it's been for centuries. And also then in subsection three says no interest is required past 2 years if the litigants caused the delay. In this case, the county clerk or the state court clerk, whoever's the clerk now, did not cause the delay. They, from the beginning, fought the taking, the property owners did. The county was not in this case. We weren't a litigant. This is the city of Las Vegas redevelopment case. We didn't take their land. We didn't deprive them of their land. We didn't take the deposit. It sat there ready at the court's disposal. Whatever the court ordered, the clerk has to turn it over. We can't take it. And so for us to now be liable that we didn't go invest it and make prime plus two, which is pretty ridiculous. So you can't get that in any bank investment. That's what the banks loan at is prime. They don't pay that on the deposits. And I have a problem with their briefs, and again, in the argument it came up saying it was speculative. We had from the year 2000 to 2006 the actual bank statements that interest that it earned. And the district court properly took that week after week, the interest rate, and times it by the amount of the deposit and said that's what we earned during those 6 years. And then for the 5 or 4 years before that we didn't have the records for, he used their experts' method. And he looked at, you know, the last 6 years that we did have the method on, or did have the actual records on, the interest paid was always just under what the CD rate was. I think it was 1% or 2% under it, and it just followed it in the T-bills, too. He looked at everything. And so what he did was went back and did have records on what the T-bills and CD rates were over those years, and he just came up with the numbers that this interest account probably made. And that's what they got. And then on top of that, and that came to $270,000, on top of that, then the court properly applied NRS 37-175 and gave him prime plus two on the amount that was actually taken. And it came to another $110,000 or so. So they got everything that the clerk took away, and then they got that, plus they got interest going back 10 years. And, you know, if I've hashed that out over and over in the briefs, I know, but I don't know what else to say on that. On the issue of the statute of limitations, frankly, I just as a lawyer would like you to issue some opinion on what the statute of limitations is on personal property case. We've had it over and over on the real estate cases, and we've adopted, as you remember, in the White Pine County case versus Reno, there are two different statutes dealing with taking of real estate by adverse possession. And you ruled that in that case, you should have applied the 15-year statute of limitations because White Pine Lumber was still paying the taxes on that property that the city was using. Therefore, just like in an adverse possession case, you have a 15-year statute of limitations if you're not paying the taxes on it, and the city wasn't paying the taxes. And you had in a footnote there that things would be different if it were, if the city had, I guess, excluded them from the tax rolls, it would have been a 5-year statute of limitations.
But, Mr. Foley, isn't the starting date on this proceeding we're here on today, July 24, 2008, because that's when the court entered its opinion, and it kind of, that kind of washes everything out before that, arguably, and then we have to look from that time forward to analyze these things.
Okay. On.
Or if you disagree, please tell me why.
You're saying that's when the claim accrued?
Well, that's when we entered the opinion saying they're entitled to interest. And I guess the county's position, they weren't, and I understand. So that interest claim was created by that opinion of July of 2008.
Right. Yeah, I guess it depends on whether you want to deal in theory or reality here, because you're right. I mean, no clerk ever thought for a minute that the money they had sitting in their trust account was going to end up exposing them to eminent domain liability up until this opinion. And that doubly true when they're talking about we didn't save these statements long enough. You know, the record of retentions law says we're supposed to keep those things for just until next year's audit, you know, 1 year. And here they want to go save them 10 years. We have no way to know. So, yeah, I don't care really which way you treat it. If nobody should have known that there was this kind of liability until 2008, fine, start the statute of limitations running then, but then you shouldn't hold us like they are, trying to say we get an adverse inference and negative treatment because we didn't foresee that 13 years earlier and keep statements going back to 1995, you know. And that's the reality of it. Nobody knew this would happen. I'm sure now they're keeping statements for as long as they can. But
no, I understand your point. It goes cuts yeah, both ways.
I think the problem with it in this case is you have to guess when the claim was made because, as I kept stating in the thing, we've never been sued. There's never been a complaint, cross-claim, anything. I mean, ever, you know. So we didn't waive anything because we never had a chance to answer. There's never been an answer. There's never been a complaint. There's never anything. All they did was a
Mr. Foley, you didn't argue that in the prior opinion. You didn't argue statute of limitations.
We brought it up.
The absence of a complaint.
All right.
And if you did, then why doesn't the prior opinion resolve those questions unfavorably to you?
Well, frankly, it wasn't in the opinion, but I mean, that's fine. If it is, then it's both sides should be bound by that opinion. I mean, the reason you didn't rule on that one that way was because what was before you was a post-judgment motion to the clerk to turn loose money that she had earned on the deposit. Right. It wasn't a complaint, you know, give us prime plus two, you took the whole deposit, because we didn't. It was a post-condemnation proceeding that we weren't involved in. It was City of Las Vegas. And it was just give them back the interest that you earned on this checking account. That was all there was. And so that's why the order should be interpreted, and it says the clerk took interest. It didn't take anything else, and that's all they should get back. I don't know. Anyway, unless there's further questions, I don't know. I'd submit on the briefs. But
any additional questions?
No. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. It's always nice being up here.
What I'm hearing Mr. Foley say is that don't punish the county. We weren't involved in the condemnation proceeding. That was the City of Las Vegas. And that's true. And so if the county feels that it needs to pay interest or that it's being forced to pay interest that it shouldn't be responsible for, it can always look to the City of Las Vegas for indemnification. The real issue is what amount would justly compensate the Muldons. And that's what I'm missing, is where is this analysis of just compensation? In any other constitutional analysis for a taking, there has to be a question of how do we justly compensate the condemnees? How do we justly compensate the private individuals that had their private property taken by the government? And I'm not hearing any kind of analysis on that. And I think that it's important to analyze, because if we just assume that just compensation is the amount of interest actually taken by the county, that seems to be somewhat of a shortcut when we have case law that tells us how to analyze just compensation, and that it's that full, real, ample, substantial compensation.
Didn't you settle the just compensation claim in the prior case with the city?
We settled. And we settled the prejudgment interest portion only with respect to the judgment amount minus the deposit amount at 9%. So there was never any...
Well, regardless of the calculation, you settled the prejudgment interest claim. So the only thing that's at issue here is interest on money you had a right to withdraw during the course of that litigation, which was raised with us in the previous case. And your client said, well, for strategic reasons, we didn't want to pull it out. But they could have.
They could have, but it's my understanding that that could have
compromised. So now you want to add interest to money that they could have gotten.
But they were between a rock and a hard place, because it would have compromised their defenses in the eminent domain action if they would have withdrawn that deposit.
How would it have? I'm just curious on
There's,
that.
I don't have the statute in front of me, but it says that you can withdraw the deposit, but if so, you're waiving certain defenses under Chapter 37. And so, first they had their land taken, and then it's, well, do we take out this deposit? But if we do, we may be jeopardizing some defenses under the eminent domain statute. So I guess we'll leave it
in. Is that the defense? You can't contest the necessity for the taking, but you can contest the amount. If you take the money, you still can contest the value of the property. You just can't contest whether it was appropriate for it to have the property taken in the first place.
I believe that's the case.
Okay.
Also, your clients settled a case. They settled a case subject to receiving the interest on deposit. We seem to be at a difference as to what the interest was on deposit. But now you're asking for something that would appear to be way above the interest on deposit. Why is that appropriate?
I believe that's appropriate because not only did my clients lose the interest that the county took, but they lost the ability to invest those funds for a significant period of time as they saw fit. You know, that was their private property, their money that they said that was due to them for the property. And during the pendency of that action,
they never made a request during the pendency of that action for any funds. So how do we get there? I hear your argument, but I'm just struggling as to how we get there with that. We come down to this was a settled case. The settlement was you get X amount of money plus whatever interest the county would have had, not speculative interest of 10 times or 20 times, but what the county would have had. And so we seem to be at loggerheads for a period of time of computing the interest. It was before the district court. So why was the district court wrong in a nutshell in your last minute and 3 seconds?
All right. This case has evolved such that now we know that an unconstitutional taking occurred when the interest was taken. And so the analysis, whenever there is any kind of Fifth Amendment taking, is how do we justly compensate? That is how we get there.
But my problem with that is, and maybe I'm restating what Justice Douglas just said, the case was here on a prior appeal. The court issued a remitter that said to the district court, do this next. You're now appealing, saying the district court made a mistake in what it did. The district court, though, was bound by what this court told it to do. In what respect did the district court deviate from this court's instructions on the prior appeal? And so wherein lies the error? That's the question I want to know the answer to.
Thank you, Justice Pickering. I believe that the answer lies in the interpretation of how you read this court's order on remand. It can be read narrowly to the interest actually earned, or it can be read to say that just that a Fifth Amendment taking occurred and they must be justly compensated.
And so your point is the district court erred in not reading it in the latter sense?
In that respect, and they erred in attempting to determine the amount actually earned, because we don't know how much was actually earned.
Thank the parties for their arguments this morning. This matter will stand submitted. All the court is back for 1:30.